from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so this is wild. So, Seth, you brought up... We're going to get to D'Amico Ryans here and Texans practice yesterday in a second, but I forget how we got on it. But
we were talking about the importance of restraint in the game. Don't get into fights in the game.
Yeah, Jerron Mayo.
You don't want to get in fights in practices because you want to, in a game situation, you would get into fight because it hurts your team.
That's right. And you brought up a great example of just the right amount of the line to push up to in a game when it comes to all the unnecessary gaga and fights, right?
It was in the Broncos game when the linebacker, Singleton for the Broncos, got in CJ's face just after the Broncos had stopped the Texans on 4th and 2 in the red zone.
Yes.
But the Texans ended up drawing a penalty out of Singleton and ended up scoring a touchdown on that drive.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect example of, okay, restrain yourselves because the other team's hurting themselves.
But there's a lot to unpack with this particular sequence. So it was 4th and 2 at the Denver 7 with 3:55 to go in the first quarter. So it's early in the game, and the Texans are leading 3-0 at that point. As you just described, unnecessary roughness on Singleton on 4th and 2. They would have gotten off the field, and the Broncos would have had the ball. Instead, the Texans keep the ball. They get it 1st and goal at the 3. And on 2nd and goal from the 3, Damian Pierce runs up the middle for a 3-yard touchdown and a 10-0 lead for the Texans.
Yay, glory!
Right, to which you would say, more glory, as Deshaun would say. Yes, more glory. The only problem is, that was the play. That Damian Pierce touchdown was the play in which Tank Dell got his leg broken. So if we had a crystal ball back then during that game, if D'Amico Ryans had a crystal ball that the league didn't know about, right, an illegal crystal ball where he could have looked ahead and said, you know what, if we accept this penalty, we lose Tank for the rest of the season.
Oh, would...
I think I'm going to...
Would that we had just had David Culley's game management in that situation. If only David Culley had turned down the penalty and decline getting a first down in the red zone.
We were looking
for the sake of field positioning. Yes,
he had a chance to pin them deep. Can you imagine? Yeah, we're going to decline the penalty. Why? No reason. Just no reason.
Bad stuff might happen if we accept this penalty.
Juju.
The football gods can be cruel, as you're about to find out.
Dude, I had to go back and relive that via box score. Brutal. Not as brutal as the Heat. Actually, more brutal than the Heat. Losing Tank Dell. I would stand on the surface of the sun to keep Tank Dell healthy. I will tell you that right now. But it was hot out there yesterday. Felt like we were on the surface of the sun. D'Amico Ryans asked yesterday following practice, which started at 11:30. All the other training camp practices have either started at 9 a.m. or 5:30 p.m., like that Sunday one did. 11:30 a.m., right in the middle of the day. Why practice in the middle of the day, Coach?
Today felt like a real training camp day for us with the heat, external elements. As we all know, it's pretty hot and humid here in Houston. It's what we have to deal with, nothing we complain about, just something we got to go to work, right? And so I tell our guys, no matter what it is, for me, it's about adversity. And when it hits you, like, how do you respond? And so a lot of guys, some guys responded well today, some didn't. So it's a lot for us to learn from and build off of.
Was this intentional, if you put it at this time, just to sort of do an acclimation period?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, getting back to it at this time, this is the time we'll be working throughout the season. So I want our guys to understand what it'll feel like, especially, you know, that first half of the season.
Yeah, and it's important to note that the Texans don't play in the regular season an outdoor game until October versus the Patriots. One of our listeners earlier pointed out that the Texans currently have a moon roof of a stadium. So does it qualify as a, you've got it slid back a little bit just so you can feel a little bit of fresh air?
Yeah. You know, I asked a couple people about that yesterday who've been in the stadium since those panels got knocked out in the hurricane. And they said it's fine. You know, like the lower bowl, like if you're standing directly where the sun might be coming through, you know, through that, then yeah, it's a little hot. You're standing in the sun, not the shade.
We can do like my dad did back in the day and just put a tarp over the hole in the roof of the trailer, you know? That's just very, very acceptable. Very acceptable.
Yeah, it is. Well, or if you're ever flying over a city that just got hit by a hurricane, half the roofs have tarps on them, you know?
Yeah. I think it's more about the mental toughness than the actual acclimatization to the heat.
Yep.
And then the practice time, too. This sounds like a stupid little thing. I liked when Gary Kubiak came in and he changed when we practiced. We'd always practice at like 2 or 3 p.m. under Dom Capers. And there's something about when you have a noon start where your body clock's not ready for it as much as when... So in practicing at game time when you're going to have these noon games, I do think it's for 6 days of the week or however many days of the week, your body gets ready for football by noon. I think that's important, too.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of both. It's mental toughness training. It doesn't even have to be about whether it's heat or rain or cold or anything like that. You got to face physical adversity and gut through it.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the schedule. They don't play a warm weather game all year. You know, they play 5 indoor games. Then they go to New England and Green Bay. And by then, it's late October. You know, it's not hot anywhere.
There were times... Okay, so this is always a battle that coaches have when you're practicing in a hot environment, is that guys stay fresher. It's easier to recover when you're practicing in that 75-degree temperature of the bubble. And the practices are a lot crisper. Guys move faster. I mean, that's just physiological. Like, no matter how mentally tough you are, your body doesn't move as well at 95 degrees as it does when it's 75 degrees.
Yeah.
So the practices are a lot crisper. But there were times, Sean, where we would practice in the bubble for a few straight weeks, and we'd go and play up north. And the heat was kind of a slap in the face.
Really?
You play a September game up in the Northeast somewhere in Kansas City. I remember we had an early season game in Kansas City one year. And I was kind of like, man, I'll tell you what. We need to be outside more. It's freaking hot up here.
Yeah.
It's always hot in Kansas, or it's often hot in Kansas City in September.
Do you, this was a big topic amongst those of us standing near the practice field yesterday. Would you rather stand and watch a practice in extreme heat or colder temperatures?
Oh, cold temperatures.
Same with me.
But I'm built for the cold. I've got the blood of Northerners in me.
That's true.
My English and Scottish ancestors were built for that.
Some of the people...
You plop them down in a battle in the Holy Land, and they'd probably be wiped out in the first couple minutes.
Yeah, I just... The heat, man, you just can't get away from yourself. Like the cold, I can bundle up. I can layer in the cold, you know?
Yeah.
I can get warm in the cold. I can't get cold in the heat.
You can have some hot chocolate at halftime or something. I looked forward to the cold weather games because sometimes they'd have like chicken broth at halftime.
Oh, really?
You're like, ooh, yeah. Sit around. Somebody tell me a story.
Okay, this is why you need to watch on YouTube so you can see the look on Seth's face thinking about the broth.
It's just me doing the thing women do with their cup of coffee
or
they're feeling the warmth. Like, I just love autumn. Don't you love autumn?
Yeah. No chance with our effeminate defensive tackle over here cuddling his cup of soup. This was funny. We're going to get to some observations from the practice in just a second, but I had a listener send this. I think he copied both of us on this, Seth, on Twitter last night.
Hold on a second. I got to tell you a quick story about cold weather games. Cincinnati. This is when I was with the Jaguars. We were playing the worst. It was awful. It was cold. And Cincinnati hadn't covered their field the night before. It had rained the night before. And then it was like freezing rain. And it was just, and then it snowed. So the turf underneath a coating of ice was a mess. It was the sloppiest conditions I've ever played in. But I remember at one point, like right before the game, it was cold as hell. And I was like, all right, guys, this is hockey. This is old time hockey. Here, let's go.
Oh, God.
Fernando Bryant, one of the defensive backs, he looked at him. He's like, "No, Seth, we are a tropical people." I'm like, "Well, I'm not going to argue with you on
Yeah, right. That's really funny. We're tropical people.
We are a tropical people.
That's really funny. Was that when you were? Was that with the Jags?
Yeah.
So that's late 90s. You described that field. I can't imagine the league letting Cincinnati get away with that in 2024. You know what I mean?
That was back in the days when Cincinnati would try to cut corners. At some point, I think the owner himself probably made an executive decision. We don't want to pay the grounds crew any more than they've got coming to them.
Dude,
you know?
100%. That's probably what it was. I just don't think, like, nowadays the aesthetic pleasingness of the TV product is such a big thing with the league, you know, that the game, you don't want sloppy games if you can prevent it.
Except in the Super Bowl, where they'll do a half-hour documentary about how much care they put into the turf, and then it ended up being the slipperiest, sloppiest, but pretty turf.
And then they have a concert at halftime on it.
Yeah,
you know,
like, yeah.
Okay, let's get into some of the observations from practice. We got our first look at the first-string offensive line all together yesterday, Seth. Tunsil,
yeah.
Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs, Shaq Mason, Titus Howard. Yeah, that's good stuff.
I'm
talking dirty to you.
Getting me going.
Right now. Yeah.
That's my warm cup of coffee.
The whole first-string offense, Joe Mixon was in there, too. And honestly, the defense, they were only missing Christian Harris and Will Anderson. So it was mostly good-on-good yesterday. That was cool to see.
And you said the offense looked sharp, right?
Looked
sharp.
Looked
very sharp. And CJ looked dialed in.
Yes.
CJ, you talk about facing adversity. Those first 3 weeks of practice where you had rookies and haphazard players going up against a potentially very ferocious pass rush, it was really hard for CJ to operate. It was concerning how many plays were just ended up just being CJ kind of just trying to make something out of nothing, making throws that he wouldn't throw in a game just because he wanted to try to get something out of the rep. So it's nice to hear that it was a lot crisper and looked more like actual football.
Yeah, CJ had a throw, and this is what I was mentioning in the tease, and you've probably seen tweets about it. I've not seen any footage of it, so this is going to turn into one of those things that I was one of five people who were there, and I saw that throw to Tank Dell in practice, and it was...
It was a 95-yard throw, it
right,
was, I swear
right.
it.
Now, yeah. That's the only thing, that's the only part about it that is available for future hyperbole, because it's impossible to overstate just how tight the coverage was, how tight the sideline was. This was the throw, man, I thank the listener who tweeted me at this, because I tried to describe it, and they said, it sounds a lot like the throw CJ made to Tank in the Tampa Bay game right before the touchdown. The one that got them from like the 40 to the 15, where CJ just, Tank was going right to left, and CJ just dropped it right in the bucket between two defenders in the sideline. It was that exact play. Except Tank was closer to the sideline, and the two defenders were, like, in Tank's hip pocket. Like, it was amazing. Like, it was one of those throws, like, man, I am so psyched this guy is our quarterback. I am so psyched that guy is our wide receiver. And you look around and go, I'm so psyched all these guys are Houston Tech. Well, most of them are Houston Texans, you know?
So he threw it into a thimble on the sideline.
He threw it into a football-shaped hole is what he did from 30 yards out.
Like, it was one of those Pro Bowl skills competitions,
yes,
right?
Yes.
There might as well have been a golf cart with a plywood set of holes on top of it.
Tank holding a big panel with a hole on top of it. It was incredible. But CJ was doing good thing. It wasn't like a one-hit wonder thing, man. Like, he had a deep ball to Brevin Jordan, got behind the defense, would have been like a 70-yard touchdown. He and Diggs just working those 8 to 10-yard out routes is just... Cody Stutes put it best. You know, the karate... You brought up Karate Kid earlier. Cody Stutes looks at me and he says, dude, the out route to Tank and to Nico is the crane kick. If do yeah. right, no can defend. And he's right. He's right.
Something you and both Cody Stutes said, you wrote something in the show prep very similar to what Cody Stutes wrote mm-hmm. at HoustonFootball.com, mm-hmm. which is that Joe Mixon just looks like a... He's a different type of running back than any of the other running backs.
No doubt.
Which, I mean, should come as no surprise. He's been a very successful running back in the league. But I think that's the first thing I thought when I saw Joe Mixon on the first day of practice yeah. was, look, I know he's a big guy, but that dude's put together different.
Yes.
He's a big running back, but that can move very, very well.
Yes.
So seeing him healthy and practicing with the team, that's a sight for sore eyes. They need that. I trust that CJ and everybody else is going to be just fine in the passing game. If you want to be a genuinely elite offense, you got to be able to run the football. I don't even need you to be a top rushing team, but when defenses sit back and play coverage, you got to be able to take advantage of that and get the easy yardage. And the Texans last year weren't really able to capitalize on those light boxes at times. They need to be able to offset the passing threat with a credible rushing attack.
However you measure the quality of a rushing attack, whether it's yards, yards per carry, DVOA, EPA, tippy-tippy-day-day, whatever acronym, you know. So however you measure rushing, Seth, and I'm talking about you, Seth Payne, what would you sign up for as far as like where the Texans rank in the NFL? Like, what would you sign up for now without knowing what's behind door number two?
I really don't care where they rank as long as they're, you know, up there.
Yeah.
I just want to see them run the ball when they need to run the ball.
Fourth quarter.
And really where the rubber meets the road is in the red zone.
Yeah.
Because that's where there's lots of teams that look good in the rankings. The Texans forever would be like this where, they're a top rushing team. Yeah, I'm the most carries in the league.
Oh, yeah.
And as long as it's between the 20s instead of in the red zone. The red zone is where it's easier to play pass coverage defensively in the red zone. You don't have as much ground to cover. You got to be able to threaten with the run to make the play action and everything else really lethal. That's when you get those wide open shots to the tight ends, is if you can run the ball. And I want to see, that's what I want. Okay, Sean, I want them to, their red zone rushing be in the top three of success rate or what have you.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I like it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Texans back at it in a couple of hours, 10:45. So in about 2.5 hours, they'll be back out on the practice field. We'll have eyes out there. We'll keep you covered. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long. And we've got you covered, really anything Texans related out of training camp. We are the place to go. All right, up next, this is the best long-form piece I've seen about Will Anderson Jr. Tyler Dunn had it. Tyler Dunn of GoLongTD.com spent about a week here back in OTAs and minicamp. And this piece on Will Anderson is incredible. You know how long-form pieces now, they give you 3 or 4 bullets at the top of the piece that kind of give you a summary? I'm going to give you 7 bullets from this Will Anderson article. I recommend you go read it, but the best parts of it we've got for you coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
For me, I always feel like it's somebody trying to take my position, and it's somebody always behind me that's just like trying to come get what I want. So like, I always want to stay on edge. I always want to stay in front. I always want to stay up to date with like whatever I got going on, man. And that was my whole mindset, and that's my mindset now. Is like, how can I continue to get better? What am I doing to set myself apart from the rest of the competition? And that's just been my mindset the whole time.
That was Will Anderson. That was early in training camp. He was one of the first players to meet with the media at training camp. And he's talking about how he basically treats every day like he's an undrafted free agent. And that's not just at training camp. That's throughout the year. That's what people have said about Will Anderson from high school to college to his first season in the NFL and his first preseason. He's banged up right now. He hasn't practiced in a few days, but he should be okay. He was working out yesterday on a side field. There was an article that dropped yesterday from Tyler Dunn. GoLongTD.com is Tyler Dunn's website. It's behind a paywall. He used to write for Bleacher Report, a few other outlets. His strength, Tyler Dunn, is in long-form pieces, and he's written a few about the Texans in the last couple years. This is as good a piece as I've read about Will Anderson, Seth.
This goes in deep. It's very long.
Very long, but very... I mean, it takes a lot for me to stick around for a full long-form article, and there are some really cool stories in here about Will Anderson.
And I think like Will kind of... In my mind, I always had this image of, man, how is this kid so tough and so tenacious, despite growing up with 5 older sisters, who everything I've seen is that they are just loving, doting sisters.
Yeah.
It turns out that they were not always so loving and doting. That they're pretty. To this day, I knew they were still tough on him. Like I'd heard the stories about it, like after he has a bad game, his sisters will kind of get on him, and they're very free and open with the criticism. But I always figured, I got kind of like in a loving big sister. No, they terrorized the hell out of this kid growing up.
Yes,
He was their little plaything. They tortured him. They locked him in closets. Yeah. They locked him in basements.
Yeah.
They made him eat, mayonnaise and jelly sandwiches at times.
That's all in the piece.
They took turns just torturing him.
And that's how the piece starts. Like, the piece literally starts with saying, Will Anderson is afraid of the dark. You know, like, and he's afraid of the dark because his 5 older sisters, as Seth just said, would torment him, lock him in closets, lock him in the basement. To this day, according to this story, he still sleeps with the TV on.
They instilled in him a fear of the dark.
Of the dark, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the theme of this piece throughout, and we'll hit on a couple of the bullet points here, is tough love. He's had a lot of tough love growing up, and it wasn't just his sisters. His dad was that way. Was that way too with him, you know?
They said, in the era of parents lobbying coaches and teachers and everything on behalf of their children, Will's dad would complain that they were playing his son too much.
Get him out of there.
Earned it. Yeah, that he wasn't playing as hard or as tough as he needs to.
Yep.
So I think there's a balance there, you know,
because
there is a lot of love, you can tell. But they had high standards for what they expected out of him, and they didn't yield in those high standards.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, if we're looking to thank anybody for this switch that Will Anderson is able to flip from being maybe one of the most lovable people in the entire city of Houston to being a terror who goes by the nickname Terminator, I think the person that we thank at the Genesis, Seth, is a now much older, but at the time, a young lad named Kevon Glenn,
mm-hmm.
who went, and let you know what, let's acknowledge Kevon Glenn here, Ben. Kevon Glenn.
Acknowledge me!
Because according to this story, Will was playing in like a rec league football league, like age 5 or 6.
And Will was just a spindly little guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, going up against this, this Kevon sounds like one of those guys that went through puberty at age 8. Yeah, just it was just a full-grown man amongst boys.
And he was knocking Will's bleep in the dirt. Like, he was destroying him to the point where Will was crying, left the field, and basically just flopped into his mom's arms, you know, mm-hmm. like crying. And Will thought about it more, he processed it, and he was embarrassed by the whole thing, and he told himself that this is never, ever, ever going to happen again.
Yeah, so he went back out, and he was a different guy after that. He said before that, he really didn't enjoy the physical part of football. He was just he wasn't really liking it, but he flipped the switch, and became a different guy after that. Yeah. So it's cool. It's one of the best things about football. Or any like super physical sport like that is it? I think a lot of people go through this transformation where they realize they gotta find something in themselves different, and some people can find it and some people can't. And Will found it, and but for a young kid, he said it wasn't because of any conversation he had with anybody or anything. He just realized like he didn't want that to happen again.
That's right.
So he went out. It's like when the bullied kid fights back.
Yes.
You know, when all of a sudden he flips out. It's like that scene from A Christmas Story.
Right.
Where Ralphie just goes off on the bully. That's
right.
What Will Anderson ended
Coward
up
Coward of the County by Kenny Rogers. Finally, Tommy had just had enough of Becky getting picked on, and he threw down.
Except in this instance, he was both Tommy and Becky.
Yeah. He was one and the same, yes. Will's dad, pretty relentless when it came to Will's training. Like, Will would play his games on Friday night and then up early Saturday morning to go train with personal trainers for football.
Yeah.
Will talked about that in his press conference that we just played a cut from, how his family motivates him.
Now, they cut me some slack because they knew I was hurt towards the end.
Yeah.
So they cut me a little bit of slack, but believe they've been on me this offseason. They've been on me. I had to wake up early every morning just to get away from them, man. They're like, when you gonna go work out? When you gonna go do this? And I said, can I just do my schedule? Can I have my schedule? But I love my family to death, and that's why I appreciate them so much, because not only do I push myself, but they push me as well.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't want to give away everything in the piece, because I would encourage people to go read it. But like, a big chunk of it is Will's relationship with his grandmother, which is a really amazing read. She's no longer with us. She passed away during his freshman year at Alabama, but that's a really cool story. Now, if we want to thank somebody for the Terminator nickname, I didn't see this coming in the story, but Steve Sarkisian is the one who nicknamed Will Anderson the Terminator back when Sark was the OC for Nick Saban at Alabama.
Yeah, well, there's an element. I didn't really, okay, it's a cool nickname to call him the Terminator. I saw early on last season why, because he has this ability to, like, he doesn't, it's like when the Terminator T2 specifically mm-hmm. would like get a hole blown in the side of his head, and he just keeps running at the same pace.
Yes.
That's what happens to Will Anderson sometimes. He'd get pulled down, but somehow like not break stride, and he would just kind of keep going at the same speed. It's really cool, and it's unique. It's different than other guys I've seen on a football field.
Yeah.
It's the perfect nickname. It really is. It's a different way of moving that Will Anderson.
That's a great description. Yeah. Now, I didn't know this. I had no idea. I think you probably have to follow Alabama a little bit closer to know that I had no idea that 2022, his last season at Alabama, was so tough for Will.
Well, it was tough. I knew that it was tough because of the position change.
Yeah.
They had him, and this was a topic of conversation leading up to the draft.
Right.
Will wasn't as statistically prolific in his final season as a lot of people's expectations were. Yeah. But they were also asking him to do a lot more stuff that makes it harder to just run around and make plays. He was lined up head up on the offensive tackle a lot, playing a four-eye alignment. And that's just, you end up being engaged with offensive linemen more so than running free. And that part was really hard for Will Anderson. I didn't know he didn't get along with his position coach.
Right.
He had a brand new position coach and they did not see eye to eye. So that part's interesting. It's hard to think of a coach not getting along with Will Anderson, but because he's like
or anybody not getting along with Will Anderson.
Right. But it was really hard for him because the season wasn't going the way that he had envisioned in his mind.
Yeah, and I knew about the stats going down. I just didn't know, and I don't know that anybody knew he was going, like, he was, this story describes him as going to, like, for him, a pretty dark place. Like, he wasn't getting along with his parents, you know, like it was dragging him down. Obviously, it didn't drag his draft stock down because the Texans gave up the sun and the moon and the stars to go get him, and we're glad that he did. Dylan Thompson is mentioned in this story, Seth. Dylan Thompson, former, I don't know what his exact title was, but he was the character coach for the Texans.
Yeah, the director of player development or something like that.
Yeah, and C.J. Stroud has mentioned him, and he's now the former director of player development because he has the same position with the Washington Commanders. Dylan Thompson really helped Will Anderson get more into his faith, which Will has cited as a big reason why he's had so much success of late. Are we concerned that Dylan Thompson is no longer in the building for the Houston Texans?
No, I think I think Dylan Thompson, just like a lot of people in the development of any young person's life are, they leave lasting changes, you know? So it's like kind of like with Framber. If Framber had to change sports psychologists or something, I wouldn't worry about him as much just because he's got practice and he's worked through those obstacles and hurdles that, you know, he's got that in his toolbox now. So likewise with Will Anderson, this article paints it's a nice picture of a guy that, you know, Will Anderson just like seems like the consummate positively driven dude who's always upbeat and always energetic. And it's good to see that, it's not just something that's easy to be that way.
That's right.
That he's really had to struggle with it and fight through some emotional setbacks and some turmoil, I think, that he's really had to work to be that guy that he is.
Yeah, that's the big takeaway from the piece, I think, is you may think it's easy. Will may make it look easy. It's not easy. Last one, real quick, Matt Burke, Will's position coach right now, said Will is second in effort of any player he's ever coached. He's second in the amount of effort that he gives behind. He said he can't quite yet put him ahead of Kyle VandenBosch, who Matt Burke crossed paths with the Titans. Kyle VandenBosch, I will tell you, he's probably, if we were talking about hated opponents before, if you ask Texan players from that like late 2000s, early aughts era of Texans football, like the Kubiak era, Kyle VandenBosch is on that hated list. And Joel Dreesen especially hated him because Joel Dreesen was the long snapper at times for that team, or he played on special teams. And he hit Kyle VandenBosch with like a crackback or a blindside block on a punt return or something. And every time the two of them were on the field together for the rest of the game, Kyle VandenBosch literally would just chase Joel around the field trying to get a hit in, trying to get a dirty hit in. After the play and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
It was pretty funny. So,
yeah, this is it's a really good piece. And honestly, anybody who had older siblings can empathize with what he went through, where it's just it's the worst. It's when the parents aren't around and they just torture you, and there's nobody you can turn to. You got to figure out a way to turn some of that dark energy into positive energy, and Will's figured out a way to do it. It only took me about 45 years to figure out how to
do that. I need Will on your YouTube channel. I need the two of you talking about this.
Just commiserating about the time, I was in the back of our dad's pickup truck with a cap on it, driving through North Carolina.
Yes.
And my brother and stepbrother decided to see how long I could last in a closed up sleeping bag. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. And I'm, And I'm like, and I got out of the sleeping and I'm pounding. You know, when there's a cap on the back of a pickup, it's not a direct. I'm pounding on the glass of the cap.
Right.
But that doesn't, my dad doesn't hear any of that. He's up there listening to you know, Kenny Loggins
Leonard,
or something.
Leonard Skinner.
And, yeah. It just sucked. It sucked.
Text message. I would bet cash money the coach Will didn't get along with was somehow connected to Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, I bet.
Bill was on the staff.
Probably Bill O'Brien was would have conversations with him. You know what you got to do with this guy is just make him second guess everything about his whole existence.
Right.
That's what you got to do.
Oh my God! All right, let's circle back to the Astros. Spencer Arrighetti was on MLB TV yesterday. The biggest thing that he has learned so far in MLB for a guy who is going to play a role for the Astros down the stretch here, without a doubt, Spencer Arrighetti. We will hear from him coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Good to be with you on a Wednesday. Texans get back at it exactly 2 hours from now. Practice at 10:45 today. We've got you covered all day long here. Spencer Arrighetti, been a nice story over the last couple of weeks, man. The rookie starting to get it. First rookie in AL history to have 12 or more strikeouts in a game, in back-to-back games. He was on MLB TV yesterday, and Spencer Arrighetti talked about, they asked him, has being in MLB taught you about prioritizing command over velocity?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, time and time again here, I've gotten beat when I fall behind. So I've put a little more stock recently into executing pitches rather than just trying to, like you said, throw it as hard as I can. And I think that it's done me a lot of good. I mean, I feel like I'm competing a lot more often. I still get to two strikes quick, and then I can throw something hard, something nasty, and try to get a swing and miss. But when I need to be in the zone, I feel like I've done a lot better job of that.
Right, so there you go. Spencer Arrighetti.
He's just made a transformation. The way we've seen this now over and over again. I owe the Astros pitching, coaching, and analytics staff an apology for doubting their greatness. But the ability to get these guys to become more mature professional pitchers over the course of a pretty compressed period of time is pretty impressive. You know, and credit to Spencer Arrighetti himself, obviously, but the ability to kind of work through bad stretches, the ability to work through, I think for young pitchers especially, I think we can all empathize with this, the frustration of throwing the perfect pitch and having it called a ball. All of that, like just to be able to work through that and then to be more surgical and strategic with your pitch selection, all of that, it's really cool to watch.
Yeah.
And we've seen it with Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti this year in a way that tip of the cap to Alex Bregman on the Hunter Brown side of things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
In a way that you just, no matter how many times you see it happen, you still can't depend on it with any one individual.
Yep.
You know, you can't just know that, okay, it doesn't work 100% of the time. Some guys simply aren't going to have it. But, man, when you can see it happen where you are with Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti right now, is I do feel a lot cockier about thinking that it's going to stick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, this isn't just some random stretch of good luck. They're making actual changes in the way they pitch and the way they approach the game that should sustain. And it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think, like, obviously the hope is they maintain health. You know, that's been the issue. Yeah. Like, all the young pitchers that have come up, like, Framber's really the only one that's kind of come up through the organization where he hasn't had to deal with much health. Framber's just a horse. You know, like, Framber, I feel like he's old school. You know, like, if they allowed him to, he could go out and pitch 7 or 8 innings every night, you know, every start. If
they told him they needed a complete game
he
out
could
of
go do it
for 3 straight games, yeah, I feel like you would do it.
He could go do it, yeah. But, you know, like, Javier, Urquidy, Luis Garcia, you know.
Javier is probably a good example. Yeah. Because Javier is that guy that came along, he was a, you know, they signed him when he was old by Latin American standards and everything else. He followed that same track, but at some point, you know, okay, he's somewhere between a reliever and a starter, most likely.
Yeah.
Like, you realize, all right, there's a ceiling there. They've done a lot with him, but we don't know exactly how many innings he's good for in a year and all of that. I guess that's still obviously the unknown with Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti is, all right, with actual heavy usage, how are they going to be over the course of an entire season?
Totally, yeah, totally. Like J.P. France is a guy that got hit with the bug last year. You know, they used him a ton, and now he's done for the season right now. You know?
Right, yeah. With J.P. France, I guess with Javier, Javier, it's more than just the... I feel like J.P. France, you still don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like J.P. France and Hunter Brown were on a similar track in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And now he's hurt this year. So you don't know. You're putting that on the back burner for now. But with Javier, it was like, okay, I just don't know how heavily you can use him in general.
Yeah.
Whether he got injured or not.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. I put this in a poll. I think I asked you this question the other day. If you needed one of these guys to win a game for you tomorrow, right? And it's Ronel Blanco or Spencer Arrighetti, because I feel pretty strongly that Framber Valdez, Hunter Brown, Justin Verlander when he comes back, that's probably your... Like, if you go into a wild card series, which as of right now, they would have to do, even though they're leading the division right now by a game and a half, they would play in one of those 2 out of 3 series to open up the postseason. I think those are, with a healthy Verlander, those are your three guys. Maybe Kikuchi's knocking on the door a little bit right now, but I think those are your three.
Yeah.
If you needed Blanco or Arrighetti to start a game for you at some point here.
Right this moment.
Who would it be? Blanco's had the better season overall, obviously. He's won 9 games. His ERA, I think, is still under 3. But over since the All-Star break, and I'm curious, I'll let you guess in a second what the people said, Seth. But since the All-Star break, Blanco's ERA is 2 runs higher than Arrighetti's. His OPS allowed is nearly 200 points higher than Arrighetti. Yeah. Blanco's allowed an 811 OPS since the All-Star break. Arrighetti is at a very robust 621 OPS against right now over the last 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, I think if you go by right now, I would take Arrighetti right now. It might feel different at the end of September. With Verlander coming back especially, now it becomes, all right, what can they do to manage Blanco and perhaps get him fresh again? And it's hard to do in the midway through a season. Some of the fatigue that a pitcher endures can't be fixed with anything except 3 months of rest.
That's right.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, midstream, can you get him back to feeling the way he did before that? I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, right now... If they said, "Oh, by the way, we had to, there's a new pandemic coming in. We got to start the playoffs now."
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to think. I think the listeners probably, or in your poll, I'm guessing it was a 70-30 split for Arrighetti.
Actually, it's very close.
Is it really?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, you got to get hit with a buzz. Yeah, you're usually really good at predicting these. This one, I'm surprised too. I thought it would be. You thought it'd be like 70% Arrighetti because of the recency.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 54%. He's winning, but it's very close to a coin flip right now among Astros.
Maybe they figure if Blanco, you know, with his postseason experience and everything else, has the ability to load up for one game, whether he's fatigued or not.
Maybe.
I mean, he hasn't pitched more than 5 2/3 innings since...
It's been a while.
July 14th.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah. Sean or Seth, this is a text. Sean or Seth, please read my heartfelt letter to Joe Espada. I'll read it. Dear Joe, please never play Presley again for the rest of my life unless we have an 8-run lead. Yours truly, Chris.
God, I got dicey last night, man.
Hell
oh,
yeah,
so dicey.
Dude.
Oh, it was so dicey.
And dicey of late.
Yeah, the feeling in your gut when Presley comes out is not the feeling that you aim for in life.
No.
Trying to be more present. Trying to pay more attention to my body, what my body's trying to tell me these days, Sean. And if I had to cut something out of my life to reduce stress right this moment, Ryan Presley in the 8th inning might be one of them.
I would. Yeah. I wonder, I wonder what it's going to take for Joe Espada if they start getting into some really important games late in the season, or more importantly, if they get into the postseason, to go away from Abreu in the 7th, Presley in the 8th, Hader in the 9th. That feels like the most formulaic thing that Espada has clung to all year long was that back end of the bullpen. Like, I feel like Hader could have a 5 ERA and he's going to be the closer until this team is done playing baseball this year. Now, Hader's pitched. He's been fine lately. He wasn't at the beginning of the year. But Presley is He's a mess right now. He had a stretch where he was really good for like 14 or 15 straight appearances, and then it's been tough. So for old Ryan Presley and the momster, right, Mrs. Presley.
Yeah, I'm kind of scared of Ryan Presley's mom too. Yeah, she's pretty vicious on social media.
Yeah, we should probably get off this topic.
I think then the other thing that you and I were wondering about is, okay, how close are you? Sean, I'm not singling you out individually, but like, how close are we to thinking that, okay, this is just who Yiner Diaz is? Like, he comes up in clutch situations. He's hitting for power. Since the beginning of June, I read it earlier. What was it? He's got like a 330 batting average and a 900 OPS.
900 OPS is the big one for me. Yeah.
I mean, that's going back a couple months now. Yep. That's a pretty good stretch he's had.
He's had a great stretch. He's been awesome. And the fact that he's a catcher and he's doing that is incredibly valuable. Although, you know, the fact that he's able to play first base is also valuable. Like, there's ways as a catcher that there's other ways other than the DH to keep him in the lineup, so you can at least park Yordan at DH every now and then. The versatility comes in really, really handy. Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Up next, how are we feeling about the Texans' chances of getting to the playoffs compared to the other postseason teams from last year? Bill Barnwell did a piece on this for ESPN.com. I feel like I can refute most of the ones he has ahead of the Texans, or at least the reasons the Texans aren't higher. Where do you feel about this as an audience? We'll get into that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.